Senate Transportation Committee to order. I'll let the record note that it is May 5th, 2011, 1 o'clock p.m. On today's agenda, we have five bills. I will, for information to the committee, number six, Senate File 1365. I've made the decision to pull that from the agenda for today. There's a fiscal note attached to that and some other work that needs to be done on the bill. I've consulted with the author and we'll potentially take that up at another time. But as for today, we're going to pull the bill from the agenda. First up, Senator Ingebrigtsen with Senate File 1082.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Senate File 1082 is a department bill that was brought to me earlier on in the session, and with regards to DWI legislation that was passed last year. And with me I have Ms. Kopinski from MnDOT, who's been kind enough to take me by the hand through the meetings here and come along and testify and using her expertise as to the points and the questions. And I'd like to start out first, Mr. Chair, with the A5 amendment, if I could.
Senator Ingebrigtsen, we don't have a quorum here, so we wouldn't be able to adopt the amendment, but if you could begin explaining the bill. As soon as we have a quorum, we'll adopt the amendment.
Certainly, and I will turn that over to Ms. Kopinski.
Mr. Chair, Joan Kopinski, Driver Services Director, Department of Public Safety. On page 7, we're asking, we're deleting Section 8, renumbering the sections in sequence, and correct the internal references, which I will explain during my testimony to the bill itself.
Ms. Kopinski, if you would like to proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, the 2010 DWI ignition interlock legislation was passed to create effective administrative sanctions for impaired driving by creating a path for safe and legal driving for high-risk drivers through the use of ignition interlock. These high-risk drivers include first-time offenders with an alcohol concentration level of 0.16 and repeat DWI offenders. Senate File 1082 relates specifically to the mandatory revocation periods described in Minnesota Statute 169A.54 for first-time DWI offenders convicted of violating Minnesota Statute 169A.20, whose blood alcohol content is twice the legal limit, 0.16, but less than 0.20. The language is needed to implement DWI legislation regarding driver license sanctions for impaired driving and the use of ignition interlock as prescribed by the 2010 legislature. The current law fails to clearly define revocation periods for those convicted of violating MS 169A.20 whose blood alcohol content is twice the legal limit and less than 0.20. Senate File 1082 would eliminate ambiguity in the law regarding the length of revocation time for first-time DWI offenders and further aligns DWI law. Senate File 1082 clearly defines a one-year revocation period for a first-time conviction of a DWI if the offender's alcohol concentration level is twice the legal limit or greater. By failing to amend 169A.54 to include offenders as described, these offenders would likely receive the mandatory revocation period, which is not less than 30 days. This bill will help the department align the revocation periods in the implied consent laws with the conviction and subsequent revocation length.
Okay. We're getting close to having a quorum here, and as soon as we do, why don't we?
Yep. There's two standing out in the hallway. Probably,
Mr. Chair.
We could sure use them about this time.
We got a quorum now.
Give us a quorum.
Mr. Chair.
They could just check in. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Just a point of order and advice, like similar to Senator Perry, if you have food here for your for the chair, if the chair were to have food at the meetings, you'd probably have them come a little quicker on time. At this point, Mr. Chair, maybe some questions of the committee.
We have a quorum.
Of the presenter.
We currently have a quorum. So,
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the amendment. The A5 amendment.
Senator DeGryff moves the A5 amendment. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
To that amendment, do you have any questions, Mr. Chair and members? It's a deletion of the rulemaking, Section 8.
Mr. Chair.
Senator DeGryff.
Chair. Senator Ingebrigtsen, just to clarify, this really isn't changing any laws or changing any rules. It's just clarifying.
That's correct, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Correcting some language. Okay, thank you.
Any other discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Hall.
Mr. Chair, I move that Senate File 1082 be recommended to pass as amendment and sent to the Senate floor.
I have
Senator Perry.
Senator Ingebrigtsen, I was just looking. Did you say it repeals Section 8? Or just, I'm wondering about the rulemaking.
Senator Ingebrigtsen?
You took that out, right? That's what
that's
I heard.
That's what it does. It takes it out, it's Senator. That's correct.
It's the long years of those pistol practices. I'm on the wrong side here, so sorry.
All right. Any other discussion? Senator Hall moves that Senate File 1082 be recommended to pass and sent to the Senate floor. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you very much.
Next on the agenda is Senator Wieger. And this is Senator Wieger returns to us with the carbon monoxide bill that we heard earlier. And what we want to do today is just procedural. And I would move that we take Senate File 1042 from the table. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. We are doing this so that we can send it on to finance as a standalone bill. And like I say, just a procedural thing here. So does anybody want an overview of the bill again? The carbon monoxide, what it is putting a section in our driver's manual for educational information about carbon monoxide. And we've had the testimony. Any further discussion? All right. All those in favor? Or we need a motion, don't we?
Right. I'd move Senate File 1042 be recommended to pass and sent to the floor.
Senator Perry.
To finance, excuse me.
Finance. Senator Perry moves that Senate File 1042 be recommended to pass and sent to the Committee on Finance. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank
you,
Mr.
for carrying that bill, Senator Wieger, and for your efforts. Appreciate it. Next up, we have Senator Fischbach.
She's not here. I guess I can go.
Senator Fischbach isn't quite ready yet. We'll take up Senate File 266. Senator Hall. Senator Hall. Senator Hall.
Mr. Chair, before we get started, I have an A1 amendment that I'd like to move to put this bill in a proper form.
Have that amendment to pass out. Page list. Senator Howell moves the A1 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Okay, to the amendment, Senator Howell.
To the amendment and to the bill, Mr. Chair and committee members, this bill has to do with modifying exemptions for road equipment for preparing for winter storms. And I have with me today Kent Solom, who's the with the Association of Townships, and he's going to explain what this bill intends to do. It just clarifies some things so we can get prepared for ice and snow removal in our state.
Mr. Solom.
Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, I'm Kent Solom, General Counsel for the Minnesota Association of Townships. This bill was brought to us by one of our members through our legislative process after one of their snowplow operators got pulled over last winter. He had gone to the county garage, loaded up with sand and salt, and was on the way back to the township to put the blades on, and was pulled over for being overweight. And under the current exemption, the law reads that you are actively engaged, and the patrol officer who pulled him over said, well, because you don't have a blade, you're not actively engaged in removing the snow. I've talked with the person who does most of the training for vehicles, and he said, no, absolutely, that's not our intent. And so we worked out some clarifying language with everybody that says, you know, if you're preparing the vehicle for snow removal, ice removal, at the advice of the revisor's office, other similar slippery conditions was added. That's all this bill does. We're not changing the actual weight limits. We're not changing any other current law. We're just clarifying that preparing the vehicle and actively doing the snow and ice removal are all covered by the same thing. Hopefully it's viewed as common sense.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Howell.
I see Senator Perry's ready to make a comment. He knows ignorance for the law is no excuse, right?
Senator Perry.
I was just commenting, either it was a brand new officer or it was a former mayor that made that kind of mistake. I'm not quite sure. I have to admit, though, it sometimes, and this is probably all of us that have had officers, new ones underneath us, and I can remember doing some foolish things when I was early on in law enforcement, but you know, this is where sometimes we have to remind our managers and our higher ups to work a little harder with interpretations of some of these laws and maybe talk about how we actually enforce them and the common sense of what the law really entails. But we were having a little levity on your behalf over there.
Oh, Senator Hall.
I would... Mr. Chair and committee members, I would move that the Senate file 266 as amendment be recommended to pass to the Senate floor.
Senator Howell moves that Senate file 266 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the Senate floor. Further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you.
Senator Fischbach.
Yes.
Senate file 1293. Welcome to the committee.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. And, I think I will just take, it's a fairly, you know what, though? I do have an author's amendment if someone would be prepared to offer. That is the A1 amendment.
Mr. Chairman, move the A1 amendment.
Senator Cruz moves the A1 amendment to Senate file 1293.
And it just adds a little bit of language that will clarify things, so I appreciate that. And this is my first hearing, so it's...
Call for the vote as soon as we have it. We should at least have it
okay.
In our hand.
I'm sorry.
We don't want to
I
vote on something we haven't seen. So, sorry, Senator. Okay. It would be somewhat like passing a health care bill without being able to read it.
Really? Nobody ever does that, do they, Mr. Chair?
Senator Cruz moves the A1 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you very much.
Senator Fischbach.
B- basically, Senate File 1293 clarifies some language so that it'll ensure that a permit may not be denied because a licensed protective agent is doing the escort. So we're referring to escorting funeral procession or oversized loads. And then the last sentence there, you know, it prevents the adoption of rules barring protective agents. So not only would it cover the statutory language in allowing those licensed protective agents to do the escorts, but it would also bar the Commissioner of Transportation from making rules that would be in contrast to that language. So I think it's a fairly simple bill. But I know that there are a couple of folks. Well, it looks like there's actually a few more, but I know that Mr. and Mrs. Patterson would like to speak on it and could answer questions, too, I'm sure, if there was, if there were any. Unless there are questions.
Senator Fischbach, maybe we can get somebody from DPS up to talk about what a licensed protective agent is, and I guess maybe to give us a little more information on what we are dealing with as far as not adopting rules to perform this task. Senator Fischbach?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Patterson might be able to answer some of that, and I don't know if there's other. It does indicate on the agenda that there's a couple other people that I think want to testify, but... Maybe if
why don't
just
we bring up your witnesses and have them get us up to speed as to what issue we are trying to resolve here.
Mr. Chairman?
Ms. Patterson, welcome to the committee. If you'd state your name for the record, please.
Thank you. My name is Lori Patterson. And my husband and I own a protective agent business in Avon, Minnesota. I'd like to, first of all, thank you for this opportunity and to thank Senator Fischbach for all her efforts that she's put forth for us. A protective agent is licensed through the Board of Minnesota Private Detectives and Protective Agents. They're the ones that issue the license to the protective agent. And as you can see in the existing statutes, there are services that the protective agent can do. We can provide guards, we can do responding to alarms, providing armored car services. Number four is the one that our company actually specializes in. Controlling motor traffic on public streets, roads, and highways for the purpose of escorting a funeral procession and oversized loads. And then there's a paragraph underneath Clause 5 is the one that we're addressing, where that a person covered by this subdivision may perform the traffic control duties in Clause 4 in place of a peace officer when a special permit is required. And what we're running up against with the Minnesota Department of Transportation is on these special permits, they're putting language such as, and here is their escort requirement rules that they have adopted here dated 1/15/2009, and it states in here, if a permit requires a peace officer escort, then an LPA escort cannot be substituted. They've also put in their Minnesota Commercial Truck and Passenger Regulations 2011 that under their escort section it says an LPA cannot be used in place of a peace officer when a special permit requires peace officer escort. Their permits that they issue for these special loads or this special permits, this particular one says LPAs, they do not have authority, or they do not have statutory authority to control traffic. LPAs have authority to perform traffic control duties using flashing yellow lights. MnDOT has also, on their escort requirements, stated that protective agents cannot cross a roadway center line. When controlling motor traffic on public streets, roads, and highways, if a person were to look in Minnesota Statute 169.011, you'll find that the definition of a street or highway means the entire width between boundary lines of any way or place when any part thereof is open to the use of the public as a matter of right for the purpose of vehicular traffic. So as you can see, for them stating that we can't cross the center line, we're controlling motor traffic on public roads, streets, and highways, which means the entire road. We feel that these requirements that they're adopting for, particularly for the LPAs, basically are already in violation of existing statutes. At this time, though, I would also like to mention that there are many benefits of returning the protective agent to their prior position of being able to escort encroaching oversized loads in place of peace officers. Among them are the job creation, the increased investment, and tax revenue for the state. It also allows the trucking companies to use protective agents if they so desire, instead of being forced to use a peace officer. I'd also like to kind of draw your attention to the fact that when the state patrol is escorting, they do this under their contracted services operation. And these state troopers, when they're escorting, they're off-duty officers, and these off-duty officers are getting paid overtime. And, of course, we all know that with the overtime comes the additional benefits that the state must pay, their para contribution and their Medicare contribution. We petitioned the state patrol under the Minnesota Data Practices Act. We asked for the revenues and the expenditures for the last 6 years in regards to the contracted services operation that the state patrol was doing. And our calculations show that in this operation, for the last 5 years, they have lost $1.3 million. And last year alone, it was $400,000. Now, we're really not sure what 2011 is going to bring with, you know, the increase in fuel prices, but I'm going to assume that they'll probably continue to lose. What I'm asking here, though, is if the proposed amendment is passed, it will actually make clear to MnDOT that they cannot bar the protective agent from escorting encroaching oversized loads. It will allow the protective agents to, again, compete for the escorting of oversized loads that a 1996 amendment authorized us to do. It will allow trucking companies the flexibility to use protective agents if they so desire instead of being forced to use peace officers. And it will allow protective agents to build their businesses back up, and it will benefit the state in regards to job creation and increased tax revenues. Thank you.
Ms. Patterson, you mentioned as part of your testimony that these are off-duty, the people who are doing that this service now are off-duty law enforcement officers who are being paid overtime.
Mr. Chairman?
I don't make the connection there. If they're off-duty, how could they be paid overtime? And why would the benefits be a factor in your calculations?
Mr. Chairman?
Ms. Patterson.
We got the detailed documents from the State Patrol, and in that they mentioned that the officers are off-duty, and they're using state vehicles. They get paid overtime. The report that we got, it lists every state trooper in the Minnesota, in Minnesota that did escorting of oversized loads and how much they got paid in overtime. So from those reports and what they've told us, that they are off duty and they get overtime. I was a financial accountant in a county for many years. I worked with the law enforcement and payroll, and I know that there's para that that is contributed for the overtime. The report that we got, I don't have it handy with me, but over the last 6 years, it was like $1.9 million in overtime, yet the benefits listed only showed like $28,000. Anyone can do the calculation that 1.9 times 14.4% is way more than $28,000. I don't know if I answered your question or.
No, not really, but maybe we can get some clarification from DPS or some law enforcement officials who are here. Senator Perry.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I believe we've had a discussion about this in this committee before, or maybe it was even mine. But, ma'am, I'm thinking when you say that they're off duty, they are, and when you're saying overtime, is it not correct that the agency, for example, say the State Patrol, and maybe somebody from the State Patrol can correct me, but is it not that they charge whatever company that they are transporting the rate for the use of the vehicle and the officer and bill that back so the taxpayers are not actually paying for that? Because it sounds like what you're saying is that we're letting off-duty officers take state-owned vehicles or county or city and go out and charge the people moving the load. And weigh in on this, Senator DeKreif, because you do this for your living. But I understood it is that a billing was sent out and that went to that organization. So in other words, whether it's police, sheriff, or state patrol, they were doing a competitive bidding, for better words, with the private sector to offer this opportunity. Is that
Mr. Patterson?
Mr. Chair, my name is Dwight Patterson. I am the CEO of PATS LLC. Mr. Chair and Senator, what it is off-duty state patrol officers. This is when they're not scheduled. They are not on their regular schedule. If they have a day off, they will be contacted by their dispatch and say, let them know that there is a oversized load that's going to be moving within 2 days, and if that officer would like to take that escort. If that state patrol officer says yes, well, then he comes back on duty, but he's not on the schedule to be on duty. There's where you get the off-duty, and he clocks back in, and then that becomes overtime pay, those escorted hours that he works. And it's by statute that the State Patrol charges $75.76 per hour for a state vehicle. It's like $56 if without a vehicle. And it's $180 if it's for, like, the helicopter, and it's like $400 for the Queen Air that the State Patrol owns. So when the State Patrolman is contacted by a trucking company, they are charged those troopers' actual hours from the time he leaves his house to the time he gets back. The State Patrol charges $75.76. Now, if you have a patrolman who is making $60 in overtime pay, there's not much room for the state to make any money, and that's where they're losing money, is that they're having to pay for the expenses of the vehicle, wear and tear, the fuel, the overtime pay, plus the benefits. I hope that answers your question, Mr. Chair, Senator.
Senator Perry.
You know, the numbers are almost correct because Ms. Berzovsky gave me the statute book here, and I understand that, and that does now. I'm thinking that I'm not sure if we were to look at it, and I'm kind of agreeing with you here that it is a losing proposition. Just because, as I think about it now, I don't know that these fees would equate to what I've heard here, the amount of money that the taxpayers. You know, the retirement funds. I'm not sure that this kind of a fee, if you're talking $490 for the helicopter, I think it was an hour in here. I'm not sure if that amount of money would cover the cost of the law enforcement officer and retirement. And so I'm not sure if there's anybody here that can articulate how they came up with that particular fee and what the trails would be from adding that much more money into the retirement system and so on and so forth. So I guess in a way, without knowing that, I wouldn't know if that included in the numbers here. So,
Mr. Chair.
Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to just remind the committee that this isn't eliminating that. I mean, I think that the Pattersons were just showing, giving that information for information so that people understood the program better. But really what this bill does is it levels the playing field so that there isn't a way that these private individuals are cut out of those escort services. So, you know, that will continue, but this will level the playing field so that these folks can be involved in that.
Follow up to that, Mr. Chair. I understand that, Senator Fischbach, but this discussion in my mind has opened up another door that I think, Senator Gimsey, we're probably going to have to look at. I think it would behoove us to take another look at these numbers and see what the residual, what the trails would be when we're talking, if in fact we're paying the department, they're paying this officer who's off duty. How does that affect down the road and the extra cost or whatever goes into retirement and all of that? I think to be fair, as stewards of taxpayers' dollars, it might seem that we're getting enough back for their services in an escort when really we're not. So that's the only reason I bring that part of it up. I understand what our testifiers are looking at doing, and I think it's a good idea. So
I do too, Senator Perry, and I think this is good discussion because, like they say, once you take out the actual pay portion of it, if it is based off of overtime, that doesn't leave a lot of additional money. And I also wonder about the exposure that the taxpayers of the state of Minnesota have using state vehicles to provide this service. What if something bad would happen? What would be the exposure and what is our liability in that process, too? That's got to cost something to pay for that insurance and all of the things that a private industry would have to do. But we have strayed from the purpose of the bill.
And, Mr. Chair, it is your committee. You can do whatever you like.
We can spray as much as we want here in transportation. But
I'm not here to offend, Mr. Chair.
Seem to have that effect on the chair.
Senator DeKreif, I think we'll start with you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Fischbach, and my question might go toward actually Ms. Patterson. I do have over 20 years of experience in moving superloads around the country and lined up numerous state patrol and private escorts depending on the state, and every state is different. I'd like to ask you a question about safety. We've been involved in some incredibly dangerous moves where we've done a U-turn on an interstate highway. And I feel good when the state patrol is there to help us keep the public safe and keep us safe when we're in one of those very, very difficult and dangerous moves. Do you feel your company could keep us safe in that situation, as safe as the state patrol?
Mr. Patterson.
Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Patterson.
If it's okay, I would prefer that question over to have my husband answer.
Okay.
Mr. Patterson.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Senator, I believe, yes, we can do that, because right now the State Patrol has no formal training in escorting oversized loads or heavy equipment or buildings, wherein our company, I can't speak for the other LPA companies, but in our company, we send our employees through what's called Utah Certification Program, which is an 8-hour classroom, and they get a certificate from the state of Utah saying they are now certified as an escort driver and as a flagger.
Mr. Chair.
Senator DeKreif, follow-up?
Yeah, if I could on a follow-up. I wouldn't disagree that it is possible. And quite frankly, I like the free market, and I like private industry to be able to do this. I do want to. I don't know exactly how to say this because we. I would say there are in some instances. I think the state patrol is better qualified than the private companies I've seen in the past. Even though I've worked with some very very good private companies, but there are times that a uniformed officer is helpful out there. Now I've always been told in the state of Minnesota that it's only a licensed officer that has the right to stop traffic on a roadway in Minnesota. Do you know that, or can we get an officer to respond to that question?
Mr. Patterson?
Mr. Chair, Senator, as it states again there in our statute, Minnesota Statute 326.338, it says, a person who for a fee or valuable consideration undertakes any of the following acts is considered to be engaged in a business protective agent. If you look down to number four, controlling motor traffic on public streets, roads, and highways for the purpose of escorting a funeral procession and oversized loads, or providing management and control of crowds for the purpose of safety and protection. Now, and the definition of security guards, which is Minnesota Statute 326.32, Subdivision 13. Security guard means a person who wears or carries any insignia that identifies the person to the public as security, who is paid a fee, wage, or salary to do one or more of the following. Number three, control, regulate, or direct the flow or movements of the public, whether by vehicle or otherwise, to assure protection of private property.
Senator Dupreff?
Yeah. Are we going to be hearing from any peace officers during this testimony that we might direct that question to them as well?
Senator Dupreff, we don't have a law enforcement on the list, but we would sure more than welcome them to come forward and answer our questions for us. Mr. Patterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also had the pages hand out permits. What we are on this bill, what we're trying to do, if you look at permit dated 12/26/2007, which says Perkins Specialized Transportation Contracting, you'll see that this load is 20 feet wide. On the second page, I'd like to refer to the escort requirements. It says 2-POL/LP plus 2-CIV. What that's telling the trucking company is that they're going to need two police or two LPAs plus two civilians. Yeah. It goes on to states, lead and rear police / LPA escort plus two civilian scouts escorts required with police / LPA setting distance ahead and location of scout at intersections. Radio communications amongst all in convoy required. Now, the next permit is dated 6/2010. This is after the new MnDOT policies. And this load is 15 feet wide and 1 inch. And it says Transport Bellamar International. Second page. Lead and rear civilian escort required on all multi-lane divided roadways. But on two-lane non-divided roadways, the lead escort must be a peace officer rather than an LPA. Therefore, MnDOT, Department of Transportation, that issues these permits, they just told the trucking company they cannot use an LPA. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
To that.
I have Senator Hall before you, Senator Perry. Senator Hall.
Mr. Chair, I've got a Senator Fischbach, I've got a couple of questions here. One is I'd like to know what the liability, you know, how much liability is required to carry. And, you know, I kind of share Senator DeKreif's concerns about the safety of it. And I would like to hear about what the civilian's ability to ticket, you know, someone, a regular citizen that happens to be traveling on a roadway that is not abiding it, or maybe not performing a dangerous maneuver to go either around or not obey the civilian lead vehicle or the behind vehicle. And I guess my point being is, in some cities, you know, we have trouble right now when police are responding to an emergency that vehicles don't get out of the way. And some agencies have went to sending two squad cars. So the second squad car tickets the individual who didn't get out of the way, just to kind of educate the public, and, you know, there are consequences. And so I'd just like to speak to, because I'm concerned about, you know, the liability, I'm concerned about the safety of it, and I think there is a difference when somebody sees a security car or a pilot car versus a squad car. There's a certain, I think, a different reaction to people, just the average public, when they see that. And I certainly like to see competition, too. To me, this is all about safety. It's about liability, and it's about the ability to address dangerous maneuvers, not by the people who are moving the equipment, but by people that may come in contact. If you could speak to that.
Mr. Patterson?
Mr. Chair, Senator, in the state of Minnesota, a civilian escort, there is no certification program. They do not have to have general liability. They do not have to have commercial liability. In the state of Minnesota right now, anybody can put yellow lights on their car and go put an oversized banner on their vehicle and escort. That is a reason for the steering committee that the AGC and the State Patrol and a few of the LPAs got together, and we was able to adopt Minnesota Statute 299D.085, is so that there is some uniformity that an individual will have to follow. Right now in the state of Minnesota, licensed protective agent, you have to pay for the application fee, you have to have a $10,000 surety bond, you have to have commercial general liability, and for your vehicles, you have to have commercial auto. And our vehicles have to fall under Minnesota statute to be recognizable as a security vehicle.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Hall,
could you tell me exactly what that liability is? Because a $10,000 surety bond, that takes care of a fender on a SUV. I'm wondering what is the total liability that someone carries? Is it just a standard commercial liability? It's nothing up above than what a standard commercial liability would be?
Mr. Chair, Senator, our company, because we do government contract, we do have security guards for some state-owned property. They require us, the state of Minnesota requires us to carry a million-dollar policy.
I think Ms. Berzovsky, or Senator Perry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Here's what I'm my thought here, and maybe Patterson could help me figure this out. I mean, when they show me this piece of paper that is highlighted, that says the lead escort must be a peace officer rather than an LPA. I'm thinking that it might be the fact that there's no explanation along with this permit why they're requiring a peace officer as opposed to an LPA. Do they give you? I guess without any law enforcement officers coming forward, if they would, I'm sure there's a reason, and I would venture to say, and I see somebody from the State Patrol maybe coming or whoever. Would you come forward? Because I guess maybe I have a question that I'm trying to get to. I guess, sir, and when I'm done with the question, you can answer here. But when I see this, it says, you know, peace officer rather than an LPA. It's not the practice to just randomly do that to give some off-duty officers some money, is it? Or are there certain steps that you look at based on safety and the route and everything to make your decision of a peace officer, leading or following or doing whatever?
Welcome to the committee, Captain, if you'd state your name for the record.
My name is Tim Rogatsky. I'm the commander of the commercial vehicle section. Mr. Chair, a couple different things. If I could just kind of, I've got some notes here that I was taking over there. The calculation for our contract rate takes into account the vehicle, fuel, the salary of the trooper that's going to take part in the overtime, and the motor carrier contacts each district, and they manage that individually. So if the contractor contacts our district for two troopers at a certain time for a certain function, whether it be an escort, whether it be security, or some other detail, that calculation is in there. And that's why it's a little bit different with a vehicle or without a vehicle. I can't testify as to whether or not it works out to the positive or negative. That would be something that I'd have to check into and get back to you on. And then, Senator, if you could refresh my memory for the second one.
Senator Perry.
Well, the concern I would be, as I'm thinking, is that in this one it just says that the lead escort must be a peace officer rather than an LPA. It doesn't appear anywhere on this that it gives a reasoning why the decision was to not allow LPA and to allow the peace officer. So I'm wondering, are there standards? Are there safety precautions? Is there a list that you go through that gives you the decision-making process of whether to use a peace officer or allow the LPA to do it?
Captain Rogatsky.
Mr. Chair, MnDOT is the authority. And MnDOT uses criteria. I'm sure they have rules. I can't testify to what they are, what rules and procedures that they use to determine how much that load encroaches into the oncoming lane, or what other lighting or length or width criteria that they use. All that we know is that if MnDOT requires a licensed police officer, then we comply. Permit, I haven't looked at it, but it doesn't prohibit an LPA from being in the rear.
Right.
So if they just want a lead that's a police officer, you could work with that as well.
All right, thank you.
Senator Perry and members, Ms. Berzovsky, could you talk to us about what's in current statute?
Yes, Mr. Chair. In current statute under 169.86 gives the authority to MnDOT to issue the special permit to exceed the size laws and overweight over dimension. The legislature has provided in 169.86 that when issuing the permit, the commissioner or local authority is required to specify whether the operators of the escort vehicles must be certified licensed peace officers or may be over-dimensional load escort drivers with current certificate.
Mr. Chair, I guess my question really is, what are the specifications? I understand that, but MnDOT has got to have some specifications that would give them the confidence whether or not an LPA can do it or not, rather than the speculation that somebody needs more. I think you're understanding where I'm going with this. What are those specifications that make the decision peace officer or LPA?
I'm sensing a level of discomfort with what is happening here, and I guess I would invite MnDOT, if there's somebody that can speak to this particular issue, to come forward, because
I think they're flipping a coin back there, Mr. Chairman.
I see a disconnect between who's actually issuing the permit and setting the criteria, and like local law enforcement and the state patrol. I don't see now, after being educated, I don't see the connection there that it's some way of getting overtime for officers, and that there's a bit more to it than that.
Mr.
Senator Sharon,
just before you answer, because my question is for the department, because I want to follow up on what Senator Perry is saying, which I think is the same thing, only maybe articulated a little differently. The presentation here leaves the impression in my mind that there is no basis for the differential, accepting maybe to give the business to the state rather than to them. And so what we're asking, what I think Senator Perry is asking, what I'm waiting to hear is, there's a decision-making process. What is the criteria that's used to determine and to make the rule or the differentiation that allows one group to do it or not? I'm waiting to hear that from somebody other than the presenters who are left with an impression.
Maybe Mr. Rudin could help us out here.
Mr. Chair, for the record, Eric Rudin with MnDOT Government Affairs. We're currently involved with litigation with the Pattersons, so we prefer not to comment on the specifics of that case. But just by way of history, there was an incident up in Duluth where there was a traffic accident, and a court determined that if an oversized load was going to go over the center line, then those types of loads needed to be escorted by a licensed peace officer. And so that's when MnDOT changed our policy to begin requiring that.
Senator Hall?
Mr. Chair, and I guess this question is directed to the captain. And I do want to thank Senator Fischbach for bringing this issue in front of us, because I think it's one that we, you know, I'm sure a lot of people have worked on, but we probably still need to do more work on it. But my question for the captain is, at what point does the officer that's assigned to this task get involved in the pre-planning? And I know, you know, it's got to be, they've got to be available on their, to work overtime on their time off. But I guess my question is does the officer make a, you know, go over the plan and use their judgment of, you know, maybe MnDOT missed something here, and is there an avenue for feedback for that officer before the officer gets sent out there at 8 o'clock that morning or 2 a.m. that night and say, you know, guys, this isn't going to work, or we're going to run into a problem here, and it hasn't been thought of, but yet that officer realizes that there's something missing in this pre-plan. And I'm just wondering what avenue or at what point, because I'm sure it gets pretty routine just to go out there and do these things, and I'm just wondering what that formal structure is for that feedback back to MnDOT before this permit is issued to say, you know, there's something missing here.
Captain Rodotsky.
Mr. Chair, Senator, yes, we do. We do not play a part in the lining up role of the escort, but the troopers and part of the training that we're working on will go over that, and we have done some of that training. And, yes, we have shut operations down and not allowed them to move because they weren't complying with the requirements of the permit. But normally what occurs, the trooper is given the date and the time and the location where to meet. We'll just use a house mover, for example, and they're told where to meet them. And so the trooper will show up and review the permit, meet with the contractor that's moving the house, review it, make sure that all the elements are complied with, and then they start the escort. They go the route, look that over, but for the most part, we learn about it when we show up to do the escort.
Senator Kreif?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to share a little bit with the committee, and then I may end with a question here. But typically, the trucking company is required to do a route survey, and typically, a registered route survey is required, signed by somebody with the trucking company that they've done this, everything from overhead wires to underpasses to everything. When the troopers show up in the morning, you typically have a meeting where we would pull together, talk about the route. Typically, the troopers are from the area, so they know the roads, the state highways especially, that you're going to be on, so they probably already know of any obstacles or potential obstacles on the way. But quite often it's the trucking company that takes the lead and explains their particular situation to the troopers and how they would, you know, like, I mean, this is what I do, is I oftentimes take the lead and talk with the troopers and tell them where we have the bottlenecks, where we're going to have problems, where we need some protection specifically. A lot of the loads we do are not across the whole state. They're short moves, and they're very, very large. So we sometimes turning a corner can be a major feat. So working together in tandem, and I'm not saying this specifically just with troopers, because we do this with private escorts, too, at a high level. To this particular bill, I wouldn't say that a very good private company couldn't do this, but they would have to be very good, you know. But there, Senator Howe had asked a question about a trooper being able to write a ticket, and when we're on a move like this, they don't have time to write a ticket. They do not drop back and do that when we're in the middle of a move. Now, I've never been involved in one where there was an accident. Maybe they would have to call off if there was a serious accident. We would want to stop to make sure that was taken care of. But typically, our job and their job is to take care of us, and not get involved in other things.
Senator Sharon.
I guess I'm focusing on what I think the, and I would ask Senator Fischbach if I'm understanding this correctly, that why this is being brought forward is because the private companies that are authorized under this legislation to help us moving, as indicated here, are finding that they're being, from their perspective, eliminated from certain jobs by rule or memo from the Department of Transportation, and that shouldn't be happening because the law allows them to do this. What's not answered in my mind, And I would like the department, because this is the Department of Transportation that's doing this, not the patrol, is to say, when you review these requests and make that ruling or memo, what is the criteria that you use to determine when it is okay and when it isn't? That's unclear to us. There may be a very good reason for this happening that we don't quite understand yet. Can you answer that question? I hate to move on a legislation like this, Senator Fischbach, without understanding that.
And Senator Mr. Sharon. Chair, Senator Sharon, that is exactly right. I understand what you're looking for. You're looking for the sheet that says, here's the check mark. This is, you know, either if you answer yes to these three questions, then you need a trooper, a peace officer. Or if you don't, then you can go... And so I understand what you're looking for. And, yes, you're correct about why the legislation was brought forward. And maybe the department can answer some of those questions.
Mr. Rudy?
Mr. Chair, the current policy is that if a load is going to cross over the center line of a highway, it needs to have a licensed peace officer escorting that load. But MnDOT is happy to enforce the law if the legislature like to change the law and give us different direction, we'd be happy to enforce the law. I know the Pattersons are arguing about what the current law is, but we do have a court decision that currently directs us, in our view, to require licensed peace officers to escort certain oversized loads, and so that's what we have been doing in recent history.
Mr. Patterson?
Mr. Chair, thank you. Our company was not involved in that accident that MnDOT is referring to. We were on site there, and one that I was with particularly, we were being led by the State Patrol, and we had three vehicles come down the hill. The first one pulled over. The second one started to stop, pulled back out when he seen his oversized load. The third one rear-ended him. We all pulled over. The State Patrol says, we're going to have to sit here till somebody can get back and take control of that accident. So we sat there until somebody got there. We have been cited in Stearns County for using red lights according to MnDOT policy at that time. We were allowed to be recognized as an emergency vehicle. Monoman County, we were cited. It was dismissed. It was dismissed in Stearns County. Rock County, we were cited. It was dismissed. Pipestone County, we were cited. It was dismissed because of the ambiguity of the law. However, MnDOT's policy at that time said that police and LPAs will operate according to Minnesota emergency vehicles. We need not sound an alarm, a siren, but we must display the red lights. So after about 8 years of running with the State Patrol, one day the State Patrol issued a citation. We tried to get a clarification from the State Patrol. They said you have to settle it in court. So we went to St. Louis County, went to court, represented ourselves, and the court ruled against us. But the court says, the statute certainly allows persons with oversized loads to have an escort by true emergency vehicles, or they can hire an LPA to use flashing yellow lights. That is the court ruling. Now I've got a letter from Major Kent O'Grady from the Department of Public Safety. It says, the Department of Public Safety has consistently opposed the expansion of use of red lights to anything other than emergency vehicles to guarantee that the public continues to respect the flashing red light as an emergency requiring their immediate attention and action. It is our position that the use of flashing amber lights and manual traffic control is sufficient to ensure the safety of the overdimensional load and adjacent traffic. The use of red lights in this manner is not necessary for safety and will undermine the inherent authority of the use of red lights for emergency vehicles. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Perry.
And I agree with the use of red lights. I mean, that gets to be a pretty touchy subject when you're letting unlicensed peace officers run around. We've all heard about that. You know, this is really opening up as much as I love Senator Fischbach, what you're doing here, I'm thinking we're not there yet. I am seriously thinking that we need to sit down, get MnDOT at the table, the Pattersons at the table, and we need to have a serious discussion on what fits in this statute, what's the criteria, because I've heard, well, if it goes over the center line. Well, let me tell you, I've seen a lot of loads that fit with inside the width, but whenever they turn or do anything, they go over the center line. So I think there's a lot of interpretation. I think there needs to be something other than if it goes over the center line, it's got to have a peace officer. I'm not comfortable voting on the bill right now with this, because I think we've just opened a door nobody knew was going to open. And I think it needs a lot more vetting with MnDOT and the State Patrol and the Pattersons and or whoever else, the association, to sit down and say, how are we going to make this happen? Because we know there is a purpose for LPAs, and we want to make sure in this state at least we do it right.
Senator DeCray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Captain Wadowski?
Radkowski.
I have a question for you. I mean, I'll share something that has frustrated me in the past in Minnesota. There's been times when we've made a move in the state where part of the moves were on county roads, part were on state highways, and we wanted to hire the county sheriff's department, local sheriff's department, to escort the whole way, but we were required on the state portion to have a state patrol. Is that still statute as far as you know? Or has that been lightened, and would they allow the local county sheriff's departments to do the entire move?
Captain Rogatsky.
Sure, it's Captain Rogatsky.
Okay, thank you.
Common spelling. But normally, the patrol does, when they do that, it involves multi-jurisdictional moves. So rather than hire a deputy to move from, say, the Blue Earth County line to the other Blue Earth County line, and then hire Nicollet County, it just is more seamless to have a state patrol officer to escort that.
Any other questions or comments from the committee?
Senator Fischbach, I'm not comfortable voting on this at this point in time. Like Senator Perry said, I think there's, my sense is that there's a level of discomfort here that maybe we could lay this bill over. And
well, Mr. Chair, you are the chair. So if you're not comfortable voting on it, I guess I can't ask you to do that today. And so if you wanted to lay it over or lay it on the table is what you're...
Table. Senator Perry?
Mr. Chair, you know, I would make the motion to lay it on the table with the hope that very soon we could get together with all the parties and start form, because I believe there's an immediacy here to try to do something because these loads are moving all the time. So I would move to lay the bill on the table.
Senator Perry moves to lay Senate File 1293 on the table. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Well, Mr. Chair, I will thank you very much. I appreciate the discussion that we had and that you gave us the opportunity to answer questions and make our case. So thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
And I would thank you, the Pattersons, for coming forward and the informative discussion that we've had about this issue. I just think there's some more work that needs to be done here, and we'll continue that process. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, fellow senators.
We'll now hear Senator Gimpsey's Senate File 1147.
For your Mr. bill. Chairman, I would move that we take Senate File 1147 from the table.
Senator Gimpsey moves to take Senate File 1147 from the table. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, off the table. To your bill.
Mr. Chairman, members, this is our general contractor. Construction manager bill that we had talked about on Tuesday, and there was some additional work that needed to be done with the between the contractors and the department, and the result of that is the A1 amendment, and I would move the A1 amendment.
Okay, does all the members have the A1 amendment?
Do all the members,
yes.
Mr. Chairman?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right. All those in favor of the A1 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The A1 is adopted.
And with me is Mr. Hitbis again to explain the amendment and the effects and what has been reached as far as a compromise between the parties.
Mr. Hitbis.
Mr. Chairs, fellow senators, my name is Jay Hitbis. I'm MnDOT's Innovative Contracting Director. Based on some feedback from the meeting on Tuesday and working with AGC, we've made some changes to the proposed bill I'd like to walk through right now. We deleted the two project requirement maximum per year. Instead of going with a qualified sunset type of program on this, we thought with this being a type of new construction practice, we'd like to kind of test run this first and also include some additional reporting requirements at the end of those periods based on the feedback that we've had on it. What the new bill does is at the end of five projects, there would be a reporting requirement back to the legislatures, to the chairs and ranking minority members of the legislative committees, reporting on how well these five projects worked on it. The contents report would basically be an overview of what the projects were and some of the lessons learned as we would potentially move forward with future projects in the future. Also would give recommendations as to continued use of the program after those five projects, and recommended legislation to continue, discontinue, or modify the program, since it says it's such a new program, to kind of test the waters first. We've also added some language. You'll see on lines 1-5 through 110, requiring a minimum self-performing requirement from our contractors on this. With construction manager, general contractors, MnDOT's intent that those contractors assisting MnDOT with these projects would actually be doing the construction work on it. We are looking for those skills of those contractors who normally build these things to be our construction manager, general contractor. The 30% minimum self-performing requirements and the associated language that follows it is a standard MnDOT contracting language that is included in our most of our design bid bill projects. So it's kind of standard practice that we're including inside of this bill on it. We've also added the an effective date at the end, which would allow us to begin this process the day following final enactment and expire 1 year after submission of the report. And the report would be submitted within 3 months after the completion of the fifth project.
All right, members, questions? Do you want to explain the fiscal implications, Mr. Hippas?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we did talk about this the other day. There are some startup costs in terms of developing policies and procedures, working with AGC on some of the fine details of how this would actually work and be implemented on it. We do anticipate return on that investment in terms of construction cost savings. To us, that's where really the benefit of this program comes in, is being able to save on the construction side of things where the dollars can add up on it. This has been included in our biannual budget for the next year. The startup costs have been.
Mr. Chair and members, you'll notice that there is a fiscal note here, and on the second page of the fiscal note, I believe all of you have this. It looks as though the $500,000 startup cost in year 2012 would become part of the agency budget and would be absorbed for that year as the startup cost. So there technically is no fiscal impact, and so I would move that Senate File 1147, as amended, be recommended to pass and sent to the Senate floor.
All right. Senator Yimsey moves that Senate File 1147 be recommended to pass as amended and sent to the Senate floor. Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to speak in favor of the bill and thank Senator Gimsey and the agency for this amendment. I think it improves it quite a bit. I think it's comments I made responsive to a little bit of what we heard from the AGC. So it's a good initiative. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Dibble, any other questions or comments? Senator Gimsey renews his motion to take Senate File 1147 be recommended to pass as amendment and sent to the Senate floor. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you very much.
Seeing no further business to come before this body, we will stand in adjournment.